This week's Parsha, Parshas Vayeshev, is the story of Yaakov, who the Torah tells us, Vayeshev Yaakov. Yaakov was living in the land of Israel. At that time it was called the land of Canaan. He had moved back, and he was already living there for 9 years, when the story with Yosef being sold by his brothers into slavery. And that's what happened. So the rest of the Parsha is Yosef is sold as a slave multiple times by multiple hands. Eventually he ends up in Egypt. And the Torah tells us the stories of how he is at the end of the Parsha thrown into prison by his master, who's called Potiphar, on trumped up charges and false charges, where his master's wife had accused him of trying to seduce her, trying to start up with her. And of course it was not real. And the end of the Parsha, Yosef ends up in prison. So at the beginning of the Parsha, Yaakov is in land of Canaan. He had come back after so many years. He was away for 36 years from his family, his extended family, his father. He comes back. Unfortunately, his mother had passed away just before that, but he comes back and he's with his father Yitzchak, who is still alive at the time. He does stay in Israel, and then he has to leave Israel eventually because there is a hunger. Of course, Yitzchak does pass away before that happens. This is the storyline. So the Rebbe has a very beautiful interpretation, an explanation on the beginning of the Parsha. The Parsha says that Yaakov, Vayeshev Yaakov, Yaakov lived in the land of Canaan. And Rashi quotes the Medrash, and Rashi says, why does it have to tell us Vayeshev Yaakov, Yaakov lived in the land of Canaan? It could have said, just the whole story started with, we know Yaakov, last Parsha ended up with Yaakov coming back. So clearly that's where he was. He hadn't gone anywhere in the interim. It could have started with the story of Yosef. And that's what it says right after that, the story of Yosef, who is has friction with his brothers, and Yosef has dreams, and Yosef is dreaming that he is the king, and Yosef is dreaming that the brothers are bowing to him. Brothers are jealous of him. The Torah even says that Yosef and the brothers had different perspectives on what was right and what was wrong. What Yosef thought was wrong, in fact, wasn't so wrong, which maybe we'll talk about in a minute, but the difference of Yosef and the brothers. But what's the point, Rashi asks, of saying, by Yeshev Yaakov, that Yaakov lived, that telling us right now at this point that Yaakov was living in land of Canaan, land of Israel. And Rashi quotes the Medrash and says, very famous quote, that Bikesh Yaakov Leshev B'Shalva, Yaakov wanted to live in Israel tranquilly, peacefully. He didn't want to fight anymore. He had fought with Esav, he had fought with Lavan. He had worked very hard as a shepherd. He wanted to retire. Yaakov was not a spring chicken. He wasn't that young anymore. At this point, Yaakov was over 100 years old. So Yaakov, just so you know, Yaakov was 130 years old when he comes down to Egypt. And the Torah says that Yaakov, Paro asks him, you look like such an old man. How old are you? He says, I'm 130 years old, but I had a tough life. Exactly what he says in those words in the Chumash. And Yosef at that time, the Torah tells us, was 39 years old because he became the viceroy of Egypt when he was 30. This is 9 years later. So Yaakov is 130 years old when Yosef is 39. At this point, the Torah tells us when this story happens, Yosef is 17. That says right in the Chumash. So we know exactly how many years old was Yaakov. He was over 100 years old. And he wanted to have some well-deserved rest. He said, time for me to retire. I don't want to fight anymore. So the Medrash says he wanted to sit. Hashem says to the tzaddikim, to the righteous people, to the tzaddikim, Hashem says, it's not enough that in the world to come, you're going to have amazing reward. You want to have amazing reward in this world also? No, can't be. So the problems and the anger of the aggravation of the story of Yosef happened at that time. And this Rebbe says that there are different ways to look at this statement. On the literal level, Hashem is perhaps saying to Yaakov, listen, you're asking for an evil eye, an ayin hara. And the Satan, the accusing angels, when they take a look and you're enjoying too much here in this world, the Satan starts to starts to create problems. Rebbe says that that's not really expressing the full content of this statement, because we have in the statement that Hashem is saying this and not just the Satan. So you don't, can't just blame it on the Satan. It says Hashem says that why should tzaddikim live here in this world tranquilly and peacefully? And the Rebbe goes on to explain that in fact Yaakov, and the job of the Jew, and Yaakov is our patriarch, who is the one who was tasked with fixing all the negativity in the world, bringing Mashiach. And that's why he was fighting with Lavan. That's why he was fighting with Esav. He wasn't just fighting. He was refining. He was counteracting and elevating the negative perspective, the negative of what Esav and Lavan represent, and elevating that perspective, elevating that energy to the point, to a higher point. In other words, the idea of bringing Mashiach is not to break the world. The idea of bringing Mashiach is to refine the world, to make the physical world that appears to be contrary to Judaism, contrary to serving Hashem. You take a look, you walk out in the street, and you look at the street and you say, I'm not staying here. There's so much immorality. There's so much lying and cheating and stealing and fighting and jealousy and all this stuff. I can't stay here. I have to run away. I have to run away to a place. And even Rambam says the same thing. Rambam says, since a person is affected by their surroundings, if your surroundings are affecting you badly and your surroundings are not positive surroundings, leave those surroundings. To the extent, Rambam says, if you have to, go live in the desert all by yourself. Now, this is an advice for a particular person who just plain can't control himself. But that's not the goal. That's not the mission. It's like saying not everybody can be a policeman. Sometimes you have to run away from the robber and not confront him. But the policeman's job is to confront the evildoer, to confront the lawbreaker, and to stop people just by their mere presence. The policeman shows up, all of a sudden, everybody drives a little slower when the cop car is driving behind you. And if walking down the street, hopefully if people still respect cops, then you don't break into the store window and you don't hit the, you know, mug the old lady because you're afraid of getting caught. So the job of the Jew is not only to be the police of the world. This is something that Rebbe made a point of talking about on the 19th of Kislev, which we just finished celebrating. Not only to bring morality to the world, meaning that the world shouldn't self-destruct and murder and kill and steal, but to elevate the world, to make the world a place where spirituality and holiness are felt, where you walk down the street and instead of seeing negativity, you see Kadosh Baruch Hu, you see Hashem, you see Hashem's hand, you see people who are believing, you see the world that is an expression of Hashem's creation. So Yaakov, that was Yaakov's job. Yaakov's task, and the task of each of us who are children of Yaakov, is when we are in a situation, no matter how bad the situation seems to be and how negative, it is negative only because we are up to the task of turning it around. So you don't send commandos into peacetime. You send commandos behind the enemy lines into war. That's what commandos are for. It's a waste of time to train a commando, to give the commando weaponry and training and ability, and then to have the guy go and to retire. Hashem says, you're a commando. You are Yaakov Avinu. You're not the one who is supposed to be retiring. So therefore, we find that Yaakov really was gifted by Hashem, the Rebbe says. This idea that Yosef, the aggravation of Yosef, was something that is a negative result of Yaakov's desire to retire before the times, and that's all Yaakov was left with. Rebbe says that's not the way to look at the statement. The statement, after all, says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem, is giving this to Yaakov. So why would Hashem give Yaakov something bad? Can't be. Hashem is good. So if Yaakov is being confronted now with the aggravation of having Yosef and the brothers fight, and eventually Yosef disappearing for 22 years, Yosef disappears, Yaakov thinks he's actually dead, it must be that Hashem is elevating Yaakov. It must be that the further stress that Yaakov is going through, and that is testing his faith in Hashem, is testing, not so much that Yaakov didn't believe, but it's testing his whole being. A child, God forbid, is abducted, and you think the child is dead, your favorite child, after all. Torah clearly makes that point. Yaakov was under extreme stress. The Torah also makes that point. The Torah says that he was mourning to the extent that nobody was able to comfort him. That's how bad the feelings he had was. So the Rebbe says, why would Hashem give that to Yaakov? And the Rebbe says, because Hashem wanted to elevate Yaakov with stress beyond comprehension to a level of holiness beyond comprehension. And this becomes another incredible concept in general in our lives, and Holocaust and suffering and all kinds of stuff. When Hashem tests us with things that are beyond our comprehension, it's because we have the ability to access a level of peace and faith and even tranquility that's also beyond comprehension. It makes no sense. So if the Tsaris are making no sense, if it's something that seems it's impossible for us to deal with, then the elevation and the spiritual energy that it calls forth, if we are going to keep going, is also has to make those not logical. How can you continue? Yeah, you have such Tsaris. The answer is, I'm accessing neshama strength. I'm accessing levels of energy I never knew I had. A person is confronted with something that all of a sudden they must do. You know, I've read stories, you hear stories in all the time about these people who just saw a story like that. Actually, a car falls down on a guy who was doing some work under his car, obviously not with the right kind of support. And the son, who wasn't that strong, lifts up the car. So the father, who was under the car, is able to get out. So it's just a story like that. It was reported. So in moments of great stress, in moments of great need, you become a hero. You call upon yourself. And this is, at the end of the day, what the Rebbe explains at the beginning of the Parsha, that Yaakov, as much as he was a hero already, he had still yet more to go. And the Rebbe says that this is a statement for each of us. Each of us has to be looking Leishei B'shalva, which means to sit in tranquility. What kind of tranquility, Yaakov? Did you just want to retire? No, Yaakov was a tzaddik. He was the greatest and highest of tzaddikim. Yaakov wanted the tranquility of the times of Mashiach. And the tranquility of the times of Mashiach is going to be, why is it going to be, Rambam says, this is again from the Rambam, the end of the Rambam's major work of Halacha. The Rambam explains the laws of Mashiach. The Rambam says, why did tzaddikim want Mashiach to come? So they won't have to have anti-Semitism. So he won't get beaten up when he walk in the street looking like a Jew. No, that's an outcome that, yes, it's going to be that there's going to be peace. It's going to be that there's not going to be any other something. But the real reason to want Mashiach is because at that point, spiritual energy is going to be accessible. Understanding of Hashem is going to be on a level that's way, way deeper and greater than anything that ever existed before. And the tzaddikim are not just looking to take away the negative. They're looking for the positive. They're looking for the extra access. And looking for the extra connection. And Yaakov, that's what he wanted too. So when it says that Yaakov wanted to retire comfortably in Israel, it wasn't just that he wanted to put his feet up on the couch and not have to work as a shepherd anymore. No, 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 that's what he wanted. He wanted Mashiach to come. And Hashem told him, the Rebbe says, if you really want Mashiach to come, you have to look outside yourself. You have to fix the whole world, including Egypt, including Egypt. So when the Jews went down to Egypt, the Zohar tells us that they elevated the sparks that were in Egypt. There were certain holy sparks that were in the land of Egypt, which is a land of immorality, the land of anti-belief in Hashem, idolatry, immorality, all kinds of bad things, all kinds of black magic, all kinds of bad things. And the Jews were there to elevate that land. And that's our job. So ultimately, the Rebbe concludes that the lesson from the beginning of the Parsha is that every Jew who is a child of Yaakov has this job. We have this task, no matter what we're confronted with, and sometimes because we're confronted with bad stuff and negative stuff and difficult stuff, and we think, how are we going to do it? Hashem loves you. That's why Hashem is giving. Alter Rebbe actually says exactly these words in Tanya. Because Hashem loves you, that's why he's giving you these tests, in order to call forth greater energies, in order to call forth greater powers that you have. And somebody else that doesn't have those powers, Hashem doesn't test it that way. So this is what it means, that Yaakov is our patriarch, and this is the lesson from the beginning of the Parsha. So that's one topic. I want to move on to the difference between Yosef and the brothers. And again, this is something that I've explained, that Yosef was able, on the same theme.
Rabbi, let me, before we move on, can I summarize So basically, if you're not only if you're a tzaddikim, tzaddikim doesn't get to rest, right? So this is, I was just thinking about it, visiting the Bava Chereva yesterday, and so many people there that he suffered so much before he died. I guess Hashem was elevating him, because I was thinking, what was he punished for? So it's not a punishment, it's an elevation, but it's a very hard pill to swallow.
The answer to that is the Rebbe himself spoke about this concerning his father-in-law. The Rebbe's father-in-law, the previous Rebbe, the sixth Rebbe, had ALS, if I'm not mistaken, degenerative disease, and he also had suffered in his 1927, he was in prison by the communists, and they beat him up in prison. And from that point forward, he really suffered many different things. And the last number of years, he came to this country in 1940, he passed away in 1950. The last 10 years of his life, when he came to this country, yes, it was peaceful, but his health really deteriorated. And it was hard for him to speak. It was hard for him to write. The Rebbe asked, one time the Rebbe was talking on the day of his yard site, and the Rebbe said, why would Hashem do this to a person whose entire method of serving Hashem and leading the Jewish people was through speaking and through writing? And then Hashem took away that ability for him to communicate effectively. He was still able to write, and he still did write, but clearly not the same. You know, it was very difficult. Rebbe answered what he answered, and there's no real answer. And so along the lines of what I was just saying now with Yaakov, but there is some greater effect that the suffering of the tzaddikim happens. And this actually says in Tanakh, the words of our prophets, the prophet Yeshayahu says that Mashiach is going to suffer on account of the sins of the Jewish people, and that suffering elevates the rest of the Jews. And because we're all connected, so sometimes if a person gets an infection in one part of the body, another limb somewhere else where that wasn't punctured by the poison or whatever, the blood travels. That's what happens, because the blood travels and because the body is connected. So one limb nothing happened, but that's where the effect happens. And tzaddikim are the most sensitive part of the Jewish, of the body of Jewish neshamas. And when there is something bad happening, you could stick your foot outside in the cold, but if you stick your head in the cold, you get a cold, you get sick much quicker. And the tzaddikim are more sensitive, and the suffering of the tzaddikim, therefore they're affected by the sins of the generation. And the tzaddikim also, by their suffering, because again, we're all connected, the tzaddikim atone for the sins of the people who are causing those troubles to happen. So this is a classical Judaism, this idea of the interconnectedness of the neshamas, and therefore tzaddikim suffer not because of their own sins, but because of the generation's sins. And the Torah actually says, so goes so much to say that if there's a generation of reshoim, of any kind of wicked people, Hashem blames the tzaddikim. Why didn't you fix them? Why didn't you go out? We find this on many levels. We find this in the Torah, that Rashi says this, when Moshe says to the Jews in the book of Devarim, Moshe says to the Jews that I chose judges, va'asimeim barashechem, and I placed them in at your head to direct you. And Rashi said, it says, va'asimeim, I placed them. And Rashi quotes the Midrash, it says, don't read it, va'asimeim, I put them in charge of you, I placed them. Read it, va'ashimeim, which means I made them responsible and guilty for you if you messed up. With a totally different level of interaction. So if you have a judge, and the judge is just there in order to make sure that the right sentence is passed, or that the right person, two people have an argument, maybe it's a financial argument, that it gets adjudicated, then that's one level. The judge has nothing to do with the people. The judge is simply there to make sure that the right thing happens. But Moshe said, no, the tzaddikim of the generation are actually responsible and guilty if the generation doesn't. So we find this doesn't act well. We find this also if a person commits even manslaughter. So the Torah says you have to run away to a city of refuge, and you have to stay there until the Kohen Gadol dies. And when the Kohen Gadol dies, you can go back home. And the Gemara says, what does the one thing have to do with the other? And the Kohen Gadol dies, you go back home. What does that do with the guy who was driving his car or who was chopping wood with his axe, and all of a sudden the axe head flew off and killed somebody by accident? What does this have to do with the Kohen Gadol dying? And the answer is, if the Kohen Gadol would have prayed properly, this accident would never have happened. So that's the level of responsibility that our great, great leaders, our great tzaddikim, have accepted upon themselves, and Hashem has given them, in fact, for the generation. So what I say, that Rebbe spoke about why his father-in-law was so ill at the end of his lifetime, I think it was ALS with this degenerative disease. The Rebbe's question was, why tzaddikim suffer? This is all over in our belief system. It's written in so many different ways in so many different places. I mentioned to you from the book of Yeshayahu, from the book of Devarim, from the book of from the Gemara talking about the Kohen Gadol, this concept of the interconnectedness and the suffering of the righteous for the wicked. But the Rebbe's question was, why would Hashem make the generation lose out? If the tzaddik's job is to influence the people, then stop, don't take away the ability to have that influence. If the tzaddik needs his speech, the tzaddik needs his health. So it's true that atonement's going to happen, but how, you know, so how does that work? So at any rate, that's the discussion. So it ties in with this exact discussion we're having here. Yaakov is suffering, and Yaakov is the head of the family, and eventually the entire Jewish people are suffering. And fact is that we turn back to the parsha of Lech Lecha, and Avraham was told by Hashem that your children are going to suffer. So this is a very deep conversation, the suffering that is a rectifying type of suffering, a suffering that fixes things up just by suffering. Why suffering happens, and Alter Rebbe tells us this in Tanya. Why is that? Alter Rebbe explains in Tanya, because since everything has energy, if not, it wouldn't be existing. Every single thing is created by Hashem, including suffering. The suffering that is created by Hashem is created with an intense level of spiritual energy. That the Rebbe says is from the world of the Yud-Kei of Hashem, which is before the Vav and the Hei of Hashem. So there's actually more energy that Hashem places in that basket, so to speak, in that compartment. Why does it have to come through suffering? It's because we're not yet in Mashiach's time. So Mashiach happens, we're going to access, Mashiach comes, what's going to happen is we're going to access the higher level of energy that until today you couldn't get without suffering. And we're going to have that with sweetness. We're going to have that with tranquility. And ultimately, that's really what this whole thing means. What did Yaakov really want? Yaakov wanted the sweetness of Mashiach's times without the suffering. And Hashem told him, I'm sorry, my dear Yaakov, but that's not the way it works until Mashiach actually comes. You have to bring Mashiach to make that happen. If you want the sweetness of the times of Mashiach without the suffering that goes along with it, because that's the box that it lives in, this energy, then you have to make sure you actually bring Mashiach. The only way to bring Mashiach is to leave Israel, go to Mitzrayim, to go to Egypt, which the word Mitzrayim, as you know, is the word for limitation, for being confined. Confinement is a meitzar, is something that's confined, a limitation. You have to break open the limitations. You have to break open the stuff that is blocking the spiritual energy flows, and you have to go to the source. So how do you kill a snake? By hitting its tail? No, by hitting its head. The snake is a long snake, could be 15, 16 feet long snake. You want to kill that snake, you got to hit its head. So the head of the snake was Paro, and the head of the snake was Mitzrayim, Egypt. So the Jews, to fix the world, went down to the source, to the head, to the place where it's the most intense negativity, and that's where you bring the Mashiach from. You're going into the eye of the storm, by going into the eye of the monster. That's exactly what happens. So who can do that is only a very special person, very special person who is each and every one of us. We have neshamas. So that's really what it is. It's all about.
Okay, I unmuted myself. Yeah. Well, it's a very hard pill to swallow, because
the Jews have suffered so many times, and you can't really justify, you know, the Holocaust and everything else by saying, you know, we suffered because we wanted to elevate the word and we wanted Mashiach to come. Then what happened? Why is Mashiach not coming? And I understand the explanation, but it's like saying that Jesus Christ, you know, suffered for the sin of the people. He was, you know, so he can elevate. I kind of like, it's a very hard pill to swallow. That's my, right. If there was so much suffering, let's start from Egypt, so much suffering in Egypt, and then the generation was slaughtered, and then Rabbi Akiva, and, you know, like every single generation that suffered so much, what happened to Mashiach? Like, why, where is he? Like, we suffered, we did, you know, we kind of like suffered for the sins, and then where is the Mashiach?
And that's exactly our question. So ultimately, the Rebbe finishes this particular talk by saying that what it really means is that each of us has to daven for Mashiach constantly. Just like Yaakov was looking to have this tranquility, the times of Mashiach tranquility, that's our job. So the lesson ultimately from the Parsha is enough with the suffering. We've done it. We've been there. Yes, we understand it. No, we're not questioning Hashem in any way, but we're simply saying, enough. It has already had its effect. We don't need more suffering to accomplish anything else. It's already been accomplished. That the Rebbe said this exact same words. The language of the previous Rebbe, he said, we finished polishing even the buttons of the uniform. You know, the soldiers are on display. The commander walks down to see how the uniforms are doing. So the last thing is to polish their buttons, if the brass buttons or whatever. We finished polishing all the buttons. We finished everything. And the only thing that's left is to actually, the Rebbe said, to open your eyes and see that, in fact, Mashiach is already here. That's what the Rebbe actually said in 1992. Open your eyes and you'll see that Mashiach is already here. And all, whatever little suffering is left is, you know, not it's not the real deal. It's not the real deal. Focus on the amazing stuff that's happening that never happened before in our history. The fact that so many Jews are coming back to Yiddishkeit, even though there are Jews who are leaving, the fact that we have such tranquility in the world in general, even though there are still some hot spots, the fact that anti-Semitism really is dead, even though there are still anti-Semitic activities and too many of them. But we're in a situation that we have not, you know, the only thing stopping us is ourselves, really, in most cases. We complain about this and complain about that, but mostly it's ourselves that's stopping ourselves. If the Israeli government, for example, wanted, they could just build the Beis HaMikdash on the Temple Mount, and pretty much nobody would say boo after the initial outcry. They could use any pretext they wanted. You know, it happens all the time when the Arabs are throwing rocks and throwing gasoline and throwing this and who knows what. They could use any pretext they wanted. The Arabs do it all the time. America does it all the time. And they could have done it in 67 when they took over Jerusalem. And they could have done it multiple times since then. And we're stopping ourselves. So that's, you know, we were all united. And we were all united not only in not fighting, but united in purpose, united in mission. All agreeing, all Jews all over the world agreeing that this is the point, this is the mission. There's no nation on the earth that has the power to stop us anymore. It's not, doesn't exist anymore. It used to be that there was a Stalin and there was a Hitler and there was a, well, there's no such thing anymore. It just plain isn't. It doesn't mean that it can't be tomorrow, but they're not living in tomorrow. We're living in today. Today, if any Jew anywhere wants to keep Torah, they can. They really can. So even in Iran, the Jewish community is, as much as they hate the Jews and they're actually supporting terror in Israel, and they're killing Jews in Israel, the Iranian government, and all over the world by supporting terror, the Jewish community in Iran is able to practice, which is a crazy thing if you think about it. So, you know, listen, we don't have all the answers, but we do have the mission. We do have the mission statement. So you don't have to, not always are all the answers right in front of us, but we do have a clear path of what to do and how to act. And that's powerful. That's big. It's huge, as a matter of fact. We know what to do. You know, I don't know go to a doctor, and the doctor says, why am I sick? I don't know why you're sick, but here I'll tell you how to get better. So what caused the illness? I don't know, but here's how to get better. So that's the beauty of all the Torah that we study, and the beauty of the messages in the Parsha, that it tells us how to get better. It tells us how to go from point A to point B, what to do, what's the next step? The next step is to take a look at our personal situation, live the best way we can according to the Torah, ask for Mashiach to come, open your eyes and see that the process is already happening, whatever level, everybody on their level, and recognize what our purpose is in life. And our purpose is to be conduits, to be wires and pipelines that bring Hashem's presence into the world. And then when we live that way, then it happens. It actually happens. So that's, I don't know if we answered all the questions there, but that's, that's what it's about.
Thank you, Rabbi. We'll try to be better.
Whatever. We put one foot in front of the other. That's all. I guess that's the message here from Yaakov is, put one foot in front of the other. You're faced with whatever you're faced with. Just keep on putting one foot in front of the other. Keep on walking. Keep on going. Don't let yourself get stopped. And you will get there. With one foot in front of the other, you're going to get there. It might take a little time, might be a little confusing, but you will get there. So that's the next part of the parsha, which we'll talk about hopefully next week, which really is next week and the week after. The Torah makes a bigger deal about the service of Yosef. So we talk about this week's parsha, the mission, the mission statement that Yaakov's job, the job of a Yaakov, which is every single Jew, is to not be content with the spiritual level that you have right now, but to try to fix the whole wide world, not just your own personal situation, which was Yaakov at that time. Was that I'm going to live by myself in Israel. No, you got to fix the whole world. So that's the mission statement. And then how do you do it? Well, Yaakov's children are the way to do it. And Yaakov's children were the 12 Shvatim, the 12 tribes. And the differentiation between the two methodologies of doing it is embodied by Yehuda on the one side and Yosef on the other side. So we're going to talk about that, those two methodologies of Yosef's tactics and strategies, and Yehuda's tactics and strategies and methodologies to make the mission statement that they received from their father, Yaakov, to make that into a reality, to bring Mashiach, actually. So that's what the next parshas talk about. This parsha sets it up, and the next parshas talk about it even more. So maybe we'll stop with this, and we will wish everybody who is listening a wonderful Hanukkah. And Hanukkah is the miraculous power of bringing that light into the world. Hanukkah is 8 days because the number 8, according to our great sages, is Rashba, our great sages, is a number of miraculous abilities that extend above the natural world. The natural world is 7. That's the days of the week. 8 is giving energy to an entity, to an individual, to a country, to a nation that is greater than what the natural world, miracles, greater energy that's bigger than what's in the natural order of things. And that's 8. And that's why a bris is on the 8th day, because the connection between the Jew and Hashem is above nature, above reason, it's above logic, even when it doesn't make any sense. And especially when it doesn't make any sense, that shows our connection to Hashem. And 8 is Hanukkah, and this is really tying into this parsha also, where Yaakov's connection, it didn't make any sense. Why would this happen to Yaakov at this time? And the answer is because it just serves to bring out again that deeper connection. So it doesn't make us maybe feel better, but it does make us aware of what we're supposed to be doing. And at the end of the day, maybe that does make us feel a little better.